This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Julian Ng. We have an exciting lineup for you this morning.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning. Julian, you are going to be speaking to Razman Hafiz, Chief Executive Officer of Tune Protect. And I guess the issue at hand is insurance.
Yep, travel insurance to be specific. So I think that we all know that Tune Protect has a few dependencies. One of them is AirAsia, because 90% of their business is AirAsia related. They're also 25% owned by AirAsia and related interests. So how do you wean themselves off this dependence on AirAsia? That's one thing. And the second thing they want to do, which I feel that is going to be a challenge because simply they are so tied into the AirAsia branding, is that they want to get business from the other airlines as well. You know, go up to, let's say, Philippines Airlines or some of the other budget travel around the region, saying that, hey, can you sub out your travel insurance needs to us? And what would these airlines say? Would they say okay, or would they say no? You're related to AirAsia, and therefore we don't want to do business with you. So they got that challenge on their hands.
All right, that's interesting, because they don't carry the AirAsia name, but like Tune Protect and like Tune Hotels, they're all kind of like in the minds of consumers related, right?
Yeah, but I think they do have a kind of value proposition, because I made a trip recently to Luang Prabang, which is a beautiful place, and I would actually, I shouldn't say it on radio because I want it to be a kept secret, you know, Asia's best kept secret.
No, Luang Prabang, I think, is a well-known tourist destination, and the Plain of Jars, I think, is something that, you know, people have been talking about for decades.
I mean, it was very pleasant there. Not a lot of people, not a lot of tourists, no throngs of people.
Is it because of the time of year that you
perhaps went?
Mind you, it's a very nice, cool time of year.
Beautiful,
isn't it?
Beautiful. It was like winter.
Yeah, the northern parts of Southeast Asia have kind of a wintry weather now, don't they?
Yeah. Anyway, I bought insurance from Tune Protect, and it was great. I have a feeling that they give a lot more bang for the buck as far as insurance protection coverage is concerned than...
Oh, this is a personal endorsement, Julian?
I don't know. I mean, it's an anecdotal endorsement that I got because I did a quick comparison with the other websites, and slightly more bang for the buck as far as insurance coverage is concerned for travel. So I think they do have a value proposition which may get some of the other airlines hopping onto their platform.
Okay. Apart from the breakfast grill, in fact, soon after the breakfast grill, we're going to be speaking to a representative of Human Rights Watch and also a veteran journalist from Indonesia, Andrea Sasono, on the trial of Jakarta's governor. Of course, well known by the truncated name Ahok. So the trial of Ahok is what we've been looking at. I'm going to ask, you know, him whether this is significant in terms of the direction that Indonesia is taking, the conduct of the trial, the antagonists and the protagonists in the story, meaning Ahok himself as the protagonist, and then, of course, those forces aligned against him, including Front Pembela Islam. So we're going to be looking at that trial and see whether we can get a better understanding of what's happening across the Straits.
Could you give us a quick background on why this trial happened?
Well, see, when Ahok became the governor, Julian, there were already protests, and the protests came from a small segment of Indonesian society, the kind of Islamic fundamentalists, who say that non-Muslims cannot rule over Muslims, right? So that was the basic argument. But at that point, they had nothing but that kind of philosophical or kind of frame to their objections. More recently, in some sort of campaign, Ahok had said that, some of the rivals had used religion and used a particular verse in the Quran incorrectly or in a way that was just you know, using the religion. And so on the basis of that, a report was launched that he had insulted the religion. And so therefore the police investigation into that and the trial. So the police came out to say, yes, well, maybe there is a basis for a trial, and perhaps a trial would be good. I mean, if you have a fairly decent judicial system, then trials often can provide you, provide all stakeholders with some sort of closure, though I suspect that this is just a pretext in order to, you know, from what I can tell, Julian, to attack Ahok. Like I said, when he first became governor, there was no offense. It was just that the fact that he's a Christian, and perhaps also because he's Chinese, that they raised those objections. So will it go away if he's found innocent, not guilty? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Those are the kind of questions I'm going to be asking Andreas Hausono later on. That's after the 8:30 news.
This the idea of Pancasila, which I think was founded a long time ago by Indonesia's founding president at that time. Is this still relevant today in the country?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I think that, in fact, many of the forces, there have been protests and counter-protests, not so much, I think, in favor of Ahok, supporting Ahok, but supporting the idea of diversity, supporting the Pancasila vision of Indonesia, because the Pancasila is,
it's basic. Like their version of the Rukun Negara, right?
Yeah, but a little more than that. I think it's about it's what unity in diversity is the kind of main message of the Pancasila. It is often used by those trying to fight Islamic fundamentalism in the Republic, saying, well, actually, we are a Pancasila nation. So whether you're Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, animist in Indonesia, you could all have equal claim to the country and a space in it. And of course, you would think that, say, the Balinese have come out very strongly, and so there was a Balinese contingent. Look at the protests in support of Ahok. There was a Balinese contingent because they're a Hindu part of the country, and they have been very strong in fighting against Islamic fundamentalism in that country because it directly affects them. And so these ideas that that Indonesia is all Muslim is something that the Balinese fight against quite strongly. And of course, there are also Christian provinces or where Christians, in fact, dominate in terms of the population. And so,
That's interesting. So I'm really looking forward to this interview, because I know of people and have friends from Indonesia where, you know, they often tell me stories about how their family would have, the father is from Islam, for example, and the mother is Christian, and they live under one roof. And I'm just wondering whether there is a kind of growing religious suppression over there in Indonesia.
Well, and it comes out in various ways. Andreas Hausono works for a New York-based organization called Human Rights Watch, and he specializes on the question of religious freedom and some of the dynamics. Because it's not just the question of religious minorities affects not just those who are Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, and such, but also minorities who are Muslim minorities like the Ahmadis and all that, who have actually suffered quite a bit. People have been displaced, entire communities, thousands of people displaced and attacked. Andreas Hausono and I had a discussion several months ago, Julian, and, one of the things that he says is happening is that under the new order regime of General Suharto, a lot of institutions were very, very fragile. And so, even though President Joko Widodo might, have a particular orientation, getting that message down and getting, policy direction actually enacted by people on the ground and institutions and offices is very difficult, because the kind of failure of an institutional level on the local level. And so you see a lot of arbitrariness and such happening at the local level. That's a fascinating story, because it also is that in some areas where Christians dominate, they do oppress other minorities.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know.
So it's a tit-for-tat thing.
It's also a majoritarian issue. So it's not about the specifics of who is in the majority. It's the fact that you're a majority allows you to oppress minorities. So whether you see this in Myanmar today, right? Buddhist majority and the oppression of non-Buddhists in that state. You have that in Christian Philippines. You have that in Buddhist Cambodia. You have it, you know, in many different countries in terms of the oppression of majorities of minorities by majorities. So also after the 9:30 news, we're going to have our regular segment coming from the BBC, and today they're going to be looking at cosmetics in China. So I don't know. I know I left a pause there for you to jump in to talk about your favorite cosmetics, Julian. But
I have none.
You're not going to endorse. You're not going to endorse any.
You know, there is this very faith-based driven industry, right? You look at cosmetics, you look at supplements, vitamin supplements, and you look at things that could make you great and awesome. A lot of the products these days, I think, are driven by the faith. In your immortality. That's what people are trying to sell to you, right? Looking young, anti-aging, reverse aging reversal. You know, these are the kind of things that people are trying to sell to you. And I'm sure that if you dig deep enough, you will see many ethical problems in the kind of claims that these guys are making.
Well, you know, these claims are something that I embrace. I would like to get younger, especially I hit 50. I mean, I'm going to be hitting 51 very soon. China's cosmetic industry is worth some $30 billion. That, of course, is no surprise in a country of over a billion people. So in China, I think scale is something that you can even take for
actually, if you
granted.
Think about it, 30 billion is very small when you put it into context. But I guess, I mean, because China is an economy of about 10 trillion per annum US dollars, it is 30 billion. But I guess you've got to take out the babies, the men, and the lazy ladies out there who don't use cosmetics. They're not lazy. They just embrace natural beauty.
I don't know. I see your foot still dangling in your mouth there.
And I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this.
You know, Julian, just a very quick aside. I was in Cambodia a couple of years ago. There's this wonderful art center, but it's now closed down, called Rayum. And they did a whole exhibition on the care of the self and cosmetics during the darkest era of Cambodia's modern history.
The Khmer Rouge,
the Khmer Rouge period. People still tried to put together things that would, so this idea of caring for yourself doesn't disappear, even in the darkest, times with war or famine, or, I mean, maybe not famine, but definitely with war. Maybe when things had normalized under the Khmer Rouge.
Those were really dark days for Cambodia when I think Pol Pot at that time forced people to throw out their clocks, and they were not allowed any theatre or artistic.
If you wore spectacles, you'd be accused of being an intellectual, and that was an accusation that could get you jail time or hard labor. And there were the real perversions of a particular kind of vision of purity that the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot in particular sort of pushed at that time. Very quickly, Julian, in the news, it's starting to be a very bloody Christmas season. A lorry, and this has just come in, a lorry plunged into a busy Christmas market in the heart of Berlin, killing 9 people, injuring many more. The police suspect that this was a terrorist attack. They have arrested one person, I believe one of the drivers, but the co-driver has been found dead.
Also recall that in June, a similar attack was made in Nice, France, on July this year. A 19-ton cargo truck was deliberately driven into crowds celebrating the Bastille Day. on the promenade. I can't pronounce the
promenade
name.
Promenade d'Anglais.
Yep, English promenade, right?
Yeah, translated well, I guess. Yeah,
86 people died and over 400 people injured in that particular accident.
Extraordinary, right? The sheer scale. And this was done without a bomb. This was done by using a truck as a lethal weapon. Also in Turkey, Julian, a Turkish policeman shot dead the Russian ambassador to Turkey, apparently in a protest against Russia's involvement in the Syrian conflict and in particular in Aleppo.
The killer has been identified as a member of the Ankara riot police.
Right. IMF chief has been found guilty by a French court for something she did when she was France's finance minister in 2008. She approved an award of some 400 million euros to a businessman for a disputed sale of a firm.
Adidas, actually.
Oh, is it Adidas?
The distributor of Adidas in France. And this is essentially the approval of a bailout. And the court found her negligent, although they did not charge her for any kind of sentencing. And she, as though to really tell people that she has been through some kind of punishment already, she said that the past 5 years for which the investigation was taking place, that has been an quote-unquote ordeal for her.
Well, so do you think this is going to have any effect on her position as IMF chief?
Yeah, the IMF is really considering this. They're now asking themselves some real questions now that she's been found guilty, although she's not a criminal. The court didn't brand her a criminal, but the IMF has to consider the kind of reputation this would bring to them, because their two previous high-ranking officers were also very troubled, brought the IMF reputations down. And the board will have to decide whether this guilty verdict will damage the organization. I think they would want to keep her because they have been supporting her all this while. But I think this actual official guilty sentence would be problematic for them.
Right. So, but she hasn't been handed down a fine or jail term.
Or a jail term. That's no. Right. So okay. It sounds as though the court was very half-hearted in sentencing any Christine Lagarde to any kind of a serious jail time, because she's had such a good reputation with the IMF. I think a lot of people respect her.
Okay, just very quickly, yesterday, just as we got off air, Julian, we got news of the death of actress and celebrity Zsa Zsa Gabor. She died at the age of 99. I mean, they're saying, because I think the question of when, how old she is exactly was disputed, but 99 puts her in the ballpark. She, of course, for generation, knew her as a comedian in things like Green Acres. Do you remember Green Acres?
No,
was a comedy.
Not seen it.
Yeah, well, I guess she's old enough to see it, but you know.
she's famous for, she's one of those very early celebrities who made a career out of being famous for being famous.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wall Street Journal calls her the spiritual matriarch to the Kardashians. There you go.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the Kardashians are some sort of Adams family, like, you know,
but that doesn't
incarnation of this. She is such a classy lady. I mean, the way that, you know, the kind of things that she was quoted as saying, I think one of the quotes I read yesterday was something like, you know, I'm a really good housekeeper. When I divorce my husband, I keep the house. You know, and she had 9 of them. And when she passed away yesterday, she was still married to the 9th and last of her husbands.
Prince, Prince Frederick von Anhalt. Whether he was he's a real prince or not, we don't know. But he goes by the name of Prince.
He was a prince to her. Okay, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be very sad.
Okay, and we can talk about actually longevity, because there's, you know, Dr. Heimlich of the Heimlich Maneuver also died on Friday at 96. But we'll come back to that after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues, and that was 19th Nervous Breakdown by the Rolling Stones. I didn't know this, but I'd just been informed, Julian, because with me, Julian, I'm Sherrod Kutin, that the Rolling Stones has just released an album of blues covers called Blue and Lonesome. which is quite extraordinary considering, you know, the age of many of the members of the team. Mick Jagger is already in his 70s, 73 to be precise. This album apparently goes back to their roots, you know, kind of where they started. And that song, which is really from that time, it's not from the newest album. The question is, at 73, can Mick Jagger still sing?
And sounds like he can.
Well, that's from when he was young. So what you just, the track you heard is from when he's young. We don't know what he sounds like now, but you know, one of our producers, Timothy Kang, assures us that Mick Jagger sounds exactly the same, and that he has, his voice hasn't in fact aged with him.
In fact, there are
other bits of Mick Jagger that haven't aged either, because he's just had a kid.
Yes. And they're still doing tours as well, global tours. And I think they're one of the highest band rock groups around, highest earners still till today.
Julian, would you have a child at 73? I know this is not a question of about musical talent, but
I think
would you?
That is more a ring it and sense question because, you know, I just can't rock in like a rock star and have a kid at 75. I think it has got a lot of financial repercussions and consequences. So I think as a responsible person, you would want to think about that.
Okay, so Tai Chi the question.
No,
Mick Jagger
not
obviously
really.
Has no. I mean, I'm assuming he has no financial issues.
I don't think so.
Okay. Now, the Selangor water management firm, AIR Selangor, has instructed TNB at Tenaga Nasional Berhad to speed up repairs for its Bukit Bendung, Badung, substation so that normal water services can resume sooner than Christmas Eve, the 24th. It says the works, which started 8 a.m. yesterday, expected to be done by midnight. But I'm not sure if that's actually happened. And, you know, in many ways, the people who run these things seem to be responding to the outcries and public pressure that's come out as a consequence of them, their early decision. So the question is, why does AIR Selangor only now tell Tenaga to do it speedily? I mean,
that's right.
Just seems to be a bit lame. It's like once the horse is bolted, then you kind of like, you know, give everybody instructions on how to take care of the horse.
And this is totally inexcusable for a country with the highest rainfall, one of the highest rainfalls in the world, to go through and suffer this kind of water shortages is just not acceptable at all. And
so it's not a water shortage. I mean, to be fair, Julian, it's not a water shortage.
It's a water cut, right?
It's a water cut. Yeah. So it's not because we lack water. It's just that the plant that processes the water has reduced capacity as a result of, you know, having to down some of the machines for repairs.
Yeah, I'm just wondering where the decision or where heads are going to roll as far as this is concerned.
Malaysia, where got heads roll, Ma?
I don't know, right? They always have a very cushy long-term position there. And at the end of the day,
it's called the iron rice bowl.
The houses.
With a bit of
households suffer. The households suffer for that. I saw your poll from yesterday.
Yes.
Overwhelming.
Yes. So we did a poll yesterday. About 200 votes came in. The question very simply was, you know, because some of the newspapers have been doing the spin for AIR Selangor and for, you know, the competent authorities, as they like to call them, saying that this was unavoidable. So we asked people if they thought the water cuts were unavoidable and if the explanations they have were acceptable. And no said 76%. Yes said 24%. Which is interesting. So a quarter of people accept the explanations, three quarters don't.
This is a landslide by any means.
Yeah. But I must say, you know, I feel for the 24% because in the sense that I think, you know, they're probably happier. They're dealing with this thing without the kind of bitterness and angst that the 74%, or sorry, rather 76% feel.
Well, it did rain last night as we went to bed, and it got me thinking of whether we can use rainwater, collect rainwater to supplement this disruption. But then the thoughts came back into my head that, you know, the water treatment plant was the thing that needed repair. And I was just wondering whether the rainwater needed treatment before it could be used.
Well, I think if you walk out into the rain, there's no treatment necessary. And you probably get exfoliated from the acid.
For drinking and so on, right? Well, the other thing, I wonder whether it, from a philosophical and ideological viewpoint, whether it changed your lifestyle a little bit, Sharad, over the last 2 days and made you think a little in the way you use your own water, and you had to collect water and use it sparingly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in a country where water is quite scarce and seen as a strategic commodity. And, you know, I grew up with all that propaganda about saving water and being very careful.
But today you've been turned around, right? You're using your water.
I think I'm still very careful with water. I don't leave taps running, you know, unnecessarily and such. I've just been corrected. Roland Tan reminds me that it was Eva Gabor, not Zsa Zsa Gabor, in Green Acres. So much for that. But she was great too. Okay.
I'm very disturbed that some of our listeners actually keep up with these things. Well done.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, Roland, you were there, I was there, or you're watching reruns on YouTube.
How is Green Acre in terms of ranking, like between 1 and 10?
It was very funny. It's about a kind of high society, a woman and a husband who, you know, husband decides to move and become a farmer. It sort of anticipates that other great one, you know, what is it called? That British comedy that also had that same kind of living off the grid feel about it.
Adam's Family?
No, that's American. Anyway, live off the grid. Okay, we're coming up to the first bulletin of the day with Lynn Mark on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.